This is the Eye on Potatoes, brought to you by the National Potato Council. The Eye is the place to tune in for conversations with growers and thought leaders on advocacy, production, and all things potatoes. Now, here's your host, Lane Nordland.
All right, friends, welcome back to this next conversation here on the Eye on Potatoes podcast. I'm Lane Nordland, and we first would like to thank our presenting sponsor, Syngenta. They continue to deliver solutions to help producers that are facing complex challenges in the potato industry. Syngenta provides growers with those unmatched field expertise, along with an array of effective products. For more, visit syngenta.us.com/spuddoctor for all that they provide the industry. And today's show is coming to you from the expo floor at the 2022 Potato Expo in Anaheim, California. And it's been a challenging 2 years since we were all able to gather in person at the 2020 event in Las Vegas, Nevada. But hey, the potato industry never quit working for U.S. producers in every aspect of the industry. And with the potato industry celebrating many major milestones in 2020 through 2021, and also when the Mexican Supreme Court unanimously ruled in favor of allowing U.S. potato imports, there is so much positivity in the direction of trade. And that's what we're going to talk about here today, access to Mexico and other key international markets. I'm going to quit talking now and just do introductions and introduce our guests that truly are the experts in this area. Joining us, CEO of the National Potato Council, Cam Quarles. Our friend Matt Lance is back. He's VP of Global Access at Bryant Christie. And on the phone, Chief Marketing Officer for Potatoes USA, John Tosburn. These gentlemen are joining us here today. First off, Matt, thanks for joining us, and welcome to Anaheim.
It's great to be here, and nice to see you after 2 years.
It has, and I guess the last time we would have talked would have been when we heard about that fresh access to China.
That's right.
Out in Washington, D.C. And Cam, welcome. How are things going at Potato Expo this year for you?
Hey, it's terrific, Lane. You've got the whole industry under one roof again. We're so excited to have everybody back here. Vegas was 2 years ago, and we took a little bit of a break, but now we're back. Weather couldn't be better here in California. We've got a lot of happy attendees, so this is a good deal.
Well, it truly is, and technology being a great thing as well. John Tosburn is joining us from Denver. John, how are things going on your end?
Going well, and I really appreciate you guys including me in this very important conversation, and really look forward to it.
Well, thank you again, gentlemen, for taking time. It's a very, very busy time during Expo, but we've had so many conversations on trade, but in particular, that relationship between the U.S. and Mexico. In previous podcasts, we've discussed the Mexican Supreme Court's decision. And as we look at this, and Cam and Matt, I know you all work so well together, so feel free to take this direction anywhere you want to go, because you're the real experts. I'm just the guy that's rambling on here. But Cam, what are some of the things you're sharing with attendees at Potato Expo this year on this trade front with Mexico?
Yeah, so the first thing, Lane, is what we've talked with people about is, you know, this has been a very long saga. And we've told folks if the trade issue with Mexico was a person, it would be old enough to serve in the military, vote, and now run for Congress, because it is 25 years old. But you know, obviously, we've been at that for a very long time, trying to get this to the right place. All of that time and energy has been well spent, because this 2021. The prior year saw some major movement to get this market open, and clearly the legal decision from the Mexican Supreme Court started all that in April. Some tremendous work was done by Secretary Vilsack and his team at USDA APHIS towards the latter part of the year with their Mexican counterparts, and now we're really down to the market effectively being open. We've got to make sure that our exporters start this in a measured way. We've been spending a lot of time advising the trade as to what the rules are. I want to make sure every little detail is all the boxes are checked off correctly. And certainly the primary thing is we've got to ship very clean product to Mexico to make sure that this is a durable market for the years to come. And, you know, as you said, John, Matt, and our NPC team have been kind of symbiotic in dealing with this issue. It's really great to have these folks on your team pushing every day. We all do a little bit different thing, but it's getting us to a pretty good result.
Well, and John, as you join us here on the phone, let's talk about your involvement through Potatoes USA in helping promote and market our potatoes in that Mexican market. And what are you most looking forward to as we see the trade open up?
Yeah, well, certainly we're looking forward to this immense opportunity. We did a bit of a market research study here during the fall and looked at what the opportunity really was. And given that the Mexican production has been declining while population and demand has been increasing, the gap that is there has really grown tremendously, certainly in 25 years that we've been working on this. It's a huge opportunity for the U.S. industry. As Cam said, we need to start slow. We need to start in a measured way. We don't expect or even want sales to be that large right away. But what we're going to do is we're going to try to work within the Mexican market to help create even more demand for potatoes and not focus too much initially on the U.S. aspect. Because our potatoes are very different. Once they're in the market, people will recognize those differences. They'll understand what's going on. But what we just need to do is help people to understand how nutritious potatoes are, understand what an important role they can play in everyday diet, in a diet that is healthy and that helps them to perform at their very best. And so we want to convey that nutritional message, and then we also want them to understand that there's a lot of different ways to prepare potatoes. There's some traditional ways that potatoes are used within the Mexican cuisine, but there's also some ways that kind of are fusion or bridge the gap between U.S. and Mexican, and of course there's some more traditional U.S. ways, but there's a lot of nuances there. We don't want people just to think, oh, the only way to eat a U.S. potato is a baked potato with cheese on top or something like that. I mean, there are so many nuances here, so many ways we can blend the different cultures and help them to understand how they can incorporate U.S. fresh potatoes into their everyday life. So we're really looking forward to that challenge and to reaching the consumers at retail, to reaching them through cooking classes, reaching them through radio shows. We have nutritionists lined up that are going to do radio shows that look at both nutrition and then culinary aspects, and of course through social media. We already are on social media in the market quite extensively promoting frozen potatoes and dehydrated potatoes. We're really looking forward to be able to expand that to fresh potatoes.
Well, it's truly going to be very fun to watch these new trade opportunities and the work that NPC, Potatoes USA, and all of our other partners that went into this market alone. And of course, Matt Lance and his team at Bryant Christie working on behalf of the U.S. potato industry on the Mexico issue and so many other trade areas. Matt, again, we've talked about this a lot, me being involved since 2020 in the podcast. I feel like I've been along for the ride for a little bit, but 25 years, as Cam has said. Matt, what has gone into the trying to get through all these barriers, the geopolitical, the things that we really can't grasp here in the United States, and fully trying to access this fresh market in Mexico?
The scope of the effort has been simply enormous. The man hours from the industry perspective, from the U.S. government perspective, from legal team's perspective. And there are so many aspects to opening this market. There are the legitimate tactical aspects. You know, you have to ship clean potatoes into Mexico. They have some, I emphasize some, legitimate pests of concern. And we need to make sure that we are addressing those issues when we're shipping in. Then they have some questionable pests of concern that we have fought about for years, trying to get those big, they would give us pest lists that were 60, 70 pests, and we would say, no, you have those pests, they're not legitimate, and so we had to go through that. And then once we got to an impasse on that, then it became a political issue. So we opened the market in 2003 to the border region, and we expected to expand beyond that. This is a story that most of the people in the potato industry knows. And then we got stuck there on the political issues. And then finally in 2014, we got it open for 3 weeks. We reached an agreement after some technical experts ruled in our favor, and then the legal aspects started to happening, and that's where we have our legal team in Mexico, and which made it all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruling was huge. It allowed us to open the gates and get us back to those legitimate technical issues. And frankly, we have leverage there. There's a commitment from the administration, from not just this administration, the last administration, to make this happen. This has been a thorn in the side of trade between the United States and Mexico, and I think all sides realize it needs to be fixed.
And Cam, I know you touched on the recent developments and whatnot, but obviously this show is going to air after Expo, but up until this point, all the work that, again, that we've talked about up to this point, when's that horizon going to be seen where we reach it and actually that full access? What, again, I know that's a tough question. We can't look into that crystal ball because I know there's a lot we have to work through. But when could we expect those potatoes possibly?
I mean, as a practical matter, it's really on us, the U.S. industry. We've got to get the proper packaging material, labeling material. We've got to make sure that the trade is aware of what the requirements are. But we're going to be there just in the next couple of weeks. Shipments can start. So we're thrilled to be at this point. I think for all of us, Matt and John and I and the whole industry, it's kind of a pinch me moment that a lot of folks were kind of skeptical we'd ever get there, but I'll tell you what, I really need to give a lot of credit to the incredible team at USDA and particularly at APHIS, that there was a tremendous amount of highly technical things that needed to be put in place between themselves and their Mexican counterparts were very committed to getting this done. And it was just a flurry of activity that went on in November, December, and ultimately has got us to this point. So, we, as John said, we want to address this in a measured way. We don't want any hiccups, don't want any mistakes, any unforced errors. But we're ready to start going real quick.
Well, I would say when they came to visit. In the second week of December, they came to Colorado as a site visit. And there were two very senior officials, essentially the head of APHIS for Mexico and the head of the plant division, came and wanted to see our potato industry and go over the details of the requirements. They met with John, they met with me, and with the Colorado potato industry as a representative industry. That's when I realized this is going to happen. They've made their peace. They're sending their people to look at us. And as they departed, they said, we're satisfied. We're happy with what we saw. Make sure you send clean shipments down. The easiest way to have this go afoul is to have a problem with quarantine pests. There are still forces that don't want us in the market. So send good product. But I think they've made their peace with opening the market.
Well, again, so much work going into this, and as Matt was describing, it's hard to quantify actual hours, man hours going into this from lawyers, people being on the ground, travel, truly a remarkable feat, and I take my hat off. As Cam said, so many people doubted that it could happen, but hey, that's why there's organizations that come together to advocate for the industry. So congratulations. It's almost going to happen, Cam. Almost.
We're almost there. And one thing I really want to reinforce, Lane, and John brought it up earlier, we are very focused on making this new market access. Obviously, we want it to be a benefit to our growers, and it will be. We also think it's going to be a tremendous benefit to the Mexican consumers and also to the Mexican potato industry as he and his very talented team in country work to expand, get into an economic term, the what they want to do is shift the demand curve. And when you do that, you saw a very similar thing happen here in the United States in regard to avocados. 25 years ago, the U.S. just didn't have enough avocados domestically produced to supply the country. When they had access to new volume from Mexico, it opened up tremendous new opportunities that everyone has benefited from. And we think something very similar can happen in Mexico that is going to be a great thing for both countries and very squarely for U.S. producers and Mexican consumers.
Well, again, it's going to be great to see those first shipments go down across the southern border, but that's not the only area in which we are focusing either in our trade efforts. And maybe, Matt, I'll start with you. As we look to the Asian Pacific, what are some of those opportunities that we are seeing on the trade front? What are some easy opportunities, but also some difficulties we may be working through on that your team's on?
Oh, there are always opportunities and there are always challenges. I would say in the easier front, and it's all relative, I do think in the next year and a half or so, we are going to have additional states having access into Korea. Right now, only the Pacific Northwest can ship into Korea their fresh and chipped potatoes. I think we will have another 8 or 10 states that will have access into South Korea. So that will be good. It's on the agenda. It should be a tactical discussion. So that's welcome. As far as some of the more challenging but also very important, when we gathered 2 years ago, we had opened the Chinese market, and technically that market is open, but we are having challenges getting the basically getting shipments started because of domestic Chinese regulations, import tolerances, changes that have to occur to their facilities in order to get our chipping potatoes in. This is frustrating and something that needs to be addressed, and we're working on that. Mm-hmm. Finally, I would say as far as the big picture Mexico level interest, getting table stock into Japan is very important. We're doing very well with our chipping potatoes into Japan, but we would like to have table stock into Japan. It would be a huge market. Unfortunately, it's going to be as politically challenging as opening the Mexican market. There's a lot of forces that are concerned about doing this. It'll be a different kind of negotiation, but we will need political efforts to get that market open. And I'll, you know, John has been with us the whole way on this. John, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, it's fascinating because it is a very similar in many ways to the Mexican situation, where domestic production is declining in Japan as well. And so, again, you're having this gap. And I would say it's even worse in Japan because more and more of the production there is going to potato chips and to processed products. And if you go and look at the fresh potato supply at retail for food service in Japan, it's pathetic, quite frankly, what those consumers are forced to put up with. Yet there is demand for potatoes. There is an understanding of the nutritional benefits. There are uses within the cuisine as well as desires to make U.S.-style dishes with those potatoes. So as Matt said, it's a big market opportunity. It took us almost 25 years to open up the market to chipping potatoes, which we did successfully here a number of years ago. And that market has really grown as we've worked through some of the additional impediments. So now we've put our stake in the ground. We've made it very clear that we want to gain this fresh access for table stock to Japan. And we're going to need to push from a lot of different sides. The thing that's a little different is that we don't have an industry like the chipping industry that was pulling for us. We don't have that as much in Japan. We are trying to develop that with some of the food service operators there, but it's slow and difficult. So it will be a political fight, but the one thing that I do think we have to our benefit is the technical issues have been addressed through the chipping import protocol. So if we can just overcome the political aspects, there really isn't that much technical work to talk about, though they will try to string it out for many, many years.
Well, John, thank you for that. And friends that are tuning in, we are just going to take a quick sponsor break, but we're going to be back with John, Cam, and Matt right after these messages from our friends at Syngenta. Syngenta cares about potato producer productivity and offers a wide variety of seed treatment options, protecting your investment from the beginning. Syngenta's all-liquid seed treatment Cruiser Max Potato offers protection from harmful insect pests, including Colorado potato beetle, green peach aphid, and leafhoppers. Additionally, Cruiser Max Potato delivers immediate protection against fungal diseases. Contact your local retailer for more information. Cruiser Max Potato, Cruiser 5FS, Dynasty, or Maxim MZ to find out what best fits your farm needs. All right. Once again, big thank you to our friends at Syngenta. And, of course, this show coming to you from the Syngenta Podcast Studio at the 2022 Potato Expo in Anaheim, California. And I may have already said 2020. I don't know throughout this because I don't feel that we should be in 2022. But joining us is Matt Lance with Bryant Christie, Cam Coral, CEO of the National Potato Council, and John Tonespern with the Potatoes USA. And John, before the break, we were discussing those opportunities and challenges as we look to the many Asian markets that we have trading relationships with or would like to create more opportunities. On the promotion and marketing end, what are some of the ways that we reach consumers in these key trading nations when it comes to these different types of potato products we are trying to sell? What are some of the strategies that Potato USA utilizes in capturing these markets?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and one of the things that's important to note is that every market is slightly different. So we do use different approaches in different markets. But in general, there's a couple of different ways that we try to reach consumers. We do work directly with them through a lot of social media work. We do a lot of nutrition education in the markets with running events and performance events around potatoes and performance, as well as a lot of cooking education, again, mainly delivered through social media, but also through magazines and workshops and seminars. But then we also reach the consumers at retail. In these markets, we do a lot when we can. I mean, the pandemic has hindered this a bit, but we've worked around that. We do a lot of in-store sampling and in-store promotions of our products where we're reaching consumers directly as they're purchasing product. And then another big way, because a lot of our product is sold through food service, is promotions with the food service operator. So we will work with a food service operator, say a Burger King in Thailand, to get them to add an additional fry dish to their menu, get them to then promote that it's a U.S. product. And we will help them with that promotion. We'll help them develop those dishes. We do a lot of culinary training for the chefs in these food service operations. And then once they've developed new dishes using U.S. potatoes, we help them to promote those to consumers. So it's a pretty robust campaign. And you can't do this without noting the assistance that the export funding programs from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Foreign Ag Service, that we tap into. We have to apply for those funds. We've got a pretty good track record of getting good numbers from them. And that's how we really expand the grower dollars to have a lot of impact in those markets.
Well, John, thank you for further explaining on those opportunities and the work that goes into that. And Cam, obviously on the policy side in Washington, D.C., well, let's talk about the work that your team does out on the Hill, looking at these opportunities and from that policy book of MPC, looking at trade routes and how elected officials and agencies are a key part of this as well.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the recent effort that we went through on the Mexican market access is probably a good example of that, Lane. You know, you've got a real coordinated effort that goes on. Obviously, the deal is going to be made government to government. It's going to be USDA, APHIS, working with their counterparts. They're the ones who are going to establish the rules of the road. But, you know, in that case, we had a lot of twists and turns in that saga. We had the Mexican Supreme Court was involved. We also had a tremendous amount of political influence in Mexico exerted over the years. That needed to be countered with our own political influence here in the United States, and that came from both the Secretary of Agriculture all the way up to the White House, but it also involved the individual congressional delegations, key senators who were, obviously they wanted their constituents to benefit from this new access. Everyone needed to have the up-to-date information, the status of where things were, be it in a legal battle or a regulatory battle or a purely political battle, everyone needed to see that same information and understand where the pressure points were, that at particular times you needed to make a phone call, you needed to have an in-person visit. Shoot, it went all the way up to, we had United States senators meeting with the President of Mexico saying how important this is. And I think that type of coordinated effort, of course, the Mexican agriculture industry wanted something out of this as well, and that was expanded avocado access, the two issues. Effectively, even though they weren't formally combined, they were, as a practical matter, they were linked. And those two political efforts really merged together and created a deal that was a win-win on both sides. I can't say enough for the work of the individual state organizations that represent the potato industry in doing those key things to keep their congressional delegations advised, active, and engaged. Without that, you just don't have the ability to have success. It's the thrilling thing to me about working in the potato industry is, with commercial production in over 30 states in the U.S., think of all of those senators, all of those House members who, if you're unified on an issue, that's a tremendous amount of votes and energy, both in the House and the Senate, to get things done. And so that's really, for us, in our mission to stand up for potatoes on Capitol Hill, that's the mission every day. We got to keep everybody engaged.
Now, I really can't say, since we're over COVID, since we're still amongst COVID, but we are able to travel, meet face-to-face. International travel has opened up with some restrictions. Matt, how has your position changed in working on these international issues? How, now that we are seeing a little bit of travel amongst the COVID, now Omicron the main variant, how has that changed your strategy? And we're so used to face-to-face trade opportunities. Are we going to see more of that, or are we still going to see more of a virtual on that international platform?
As John said, I think it will depend market by market. I would say the biggest change is I'm on plane a lot less than I used to be. But we have still advanced it over the last 2 years. Opening the Chinese market was concluded completely through virtual negotiations, largely starting at 2 a.m. For our U.S. negotiators, which was challenging for them. That is going to change. I think we will still have the option for virtual negotiations, but we really need to be in the room or meeting face to face. You can just get things done so much more quickly, and there, you can read a room, you can respond. I think individual markets are going to respond differently, and you can just look at the travel requirements. You still can't go to Japan right now. You can fly to Korea. I was just in Seattle Airport. There's a flight to Seoul. There's no flight to Tokyo right now. So that just can't. So I would imagine face-to-face with Japan will take longer than it will with Korea or with Taiwan or other places. But it will happen again, and we need it to happen again.
Cam, I know we have a busy schedule this afternoon. Any final thoughts on our trade front?
I think the main thing that I'd like to have everybody take away from this is, looking at Mexico and some of these other opportunities, there are some tremendous benefits that are potentially out there for this industry, but none of those benefits can be realized without coordinated, thoughtful teamwork. And this industry has a great team representing them. John, the amazing work that Bryant Christie does on our behalf, and all of the work through the state organizations, I think is just so fundamental to getting all of these benefits down to where they need to get to. It's to the family farms in the United States that grow potatoes. So that's what we're committed to every day, and just really glad to have this opportunity to talk to you. Glad to see you. Glad to see you in person, Lane.
We're in person. I know you didn't recognize me, though, with my beard, but I had my...
You had your mask on.
I had my
mask
on.
It was
on.
Okay. I knew who Layton Orland's famous. I saw him coming a long way away.
The guy in the cowboy hat coming to the hotel to the Potato Farmers Conference. So I left my hat in my room, though. And Matt, thank you for joining us. Any last thoughts you'd like to share with our audience?
You know, I've been doing this for 22 years now. And when we started this, it was a hodgepodge of voices. I'd go into a meeting and I'd leave the meeting, and then another state would be in talking about their trade issue. And what the National Potato Council and Potatoes USA and the state organizations have done is coordinate. And now we all go in with the same message, and we all have different roles to play. There's a time to go to Congress. There's a time for me to get in the weeds on the technical negotiations. But that's all being coordinated together, and we are so much stronger, and we're advancing things so much more quickly. And frankly, it's appreciated by the U.S. government. You know, they know who they can call and get the answer that they need, and we'll figure it out so they get to it. So it's huge progress in 20 years, and you can see that in all these markets we're opening.
Well, again, it takes a lot of hard work, and again, this is just the beginning on many of these projects. So, again, I'd like to thank Cam Quarles, Matt Lance, and John Toseburn for joining us here today. And I know John had to jump off the call and jump on another conference call, so we want to thank him for joining us and all the work he does at Potatoes USA. And friends, I'm Lane Nordland. That will do it for this quick update on our key international markets for the U.S. potato industry from the 2022 Potato Expo here in Anaheim, California. I'm Lane Nordland. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the National Potato Council's Eye on Potatoes podcast with host Lane Nordland. For more information, visit nationalpotatocouncil.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.